Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Coin Geek Weekly live stream. I'm your host, Kurt Wooker Jr., and I'm growing my hair out a little bit. If I get it long enough, I can put it all in a ponytail and walk around with a skullet. It'll be super classy. I'm going for that classic, that Florida look. So everybody, first of all, sorry for being me in many ways. But if you're watching live, please like, subscribe, hit the alert bell. Let your friends know that we are currently live and we will take their questions, comments, blessings, cursings, grapes, gripes, or gropes from the troll box. It is wide open, just like our friend Alex Moon, the executive producer of the show. he's scratching his head on that one. No, but seriously, give him something juicy to put up on screen. We're going to be joined by my esteemed American colleague, Special Agent Brian Doherty, who holds both the keys and the coins and the badges and all the stuff necessary to get into basically any door in the universe. He has seen the alien bodies. He shot down. What's that missing flight everyone's talking? All right, now okay, off base. Should have pre-planned my nonsense speech. So we are indeed live. We'll be talking to Brian. Brian is one of the real experts in the space who frankly deserves more limelight for all the stuff he's doing. Cause I mean it quite literally. Brian is the guy who is like goes behind the door that's got like the big skeleton key lock and all these like you know, houses of Congress and these like regulatory offices. And I think right now he's in Germany because he's like talking to Interpol about all kinds of really cool stuff. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll learn what he's been up to lately. Brian's also a hell of an entrepreneur in his own right. So he's got his own stuff that is also very exciting. So we'll talk a little bit about some of the stuff he's up to commercially and then the stuff he's up to as a, I don't know, something of like BSV's chief lobbyist or something like that. And then also talk a little bit generically about like Bitcoin and mining economics. He just released a paper that I was honored to contribute a little bit to about mining economics and the future of mining with kind of a 10-year scope. So we'll touch on some of that stuff too. But before we get to that, we must pay the bills, and we pay the bills with ad revenue because nobody seems to care about micropayments, despite the fact that the show is often about micropayments. So if you'd like to advertise on the show, you can reach out to Dr. Alex Moon. That is Alex_Moon89. I love making him blush. It's like my favorite thing in the world. So yeah, reach out to Alex if you want to advertise on the show here. You have a delightful audience of 18 to 34, typically male, typically bald, and really interested in nerdy stuff. So if that's your demographic, go ahead and reach out, become an advertiser. So with no further ado, Mr. Moon, please play.
On this week's CoinGeek Conversations, Mohammed Jabba, the co-founder of ELAS.
So what we did was, and we leveraged off the existing hardware and processes and configured it to be able to also interact with the blockchain once a trigger was done, such as opening the box. So at the moment, these tags are tamper evident. So if they're broken, you can see that. But we've taken it a step further and linked that up with a digital twin pairing and then recording those events as they happened onto the blockchain.
Join Mohammed Jabba and me, Charles Miller, for our next CoinGeek Conversation.
Hello, Special Agent Doherty. How are you?
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are. How are you doing, Mr. Kurt Walker? I see we have the same caliber.
Yes, I'm killing it, man. It's one of those weeks where I'm feeling pumped. So let's I'm hearing the echo. If you could mute while I'm talking, I know it's a little extra work, but Brian, please tell me. I know you're in Germany and you're doing something Interpol. First of all, for anybody that doesn't know what Interpol is, please explain what Interpol is, what you're consulting for, and what they gave you like a secret handshake membership coin. I'd love to hear a little bit about what's going on with all that, please.
Sure. So I'm here in Germany attending the second conference put forth by Interpol and the Bavarian Justice, Department of Bavarian Justice, and they're looking at digital asset recovery. Interesting, huh? So they're building out a framework which they will potentially be pushing out tomorrow. They'll be introducing. So I'm really excited to see that work kind of be brought forth. I think this is an area that many people, as you know, we've seen, find contentious. When you go back to even, you know, Satoshi Nakamoto saying, if gold could turn to lead when stolen and then back into gold after it's returned, you know, that should have sent, you know, a strong message that, you know, we're talking about people's property. And, you know, whether it's digital, whether it's physical, and that is, you know, we need some way for recompense of recovery of stolen or unauthorized taking of people's property. Interpol, as you know, is a global law enforcement agency, and this current conference, or actually real private summit, is made up of a bunch of other global law enforcement agencies. There's, you know, people from Hong Kong, there's, you know, all over the world. It's been really great so far. Today was the first day. I presented on digital asset recovery along with presented a special video from Marcin Zarakowski on token recovery effort. And then we also had Alexei Olaki, who also has a platform for recovery that they assist with. So it was an interesting conversation. I don't think most of, and this is relatively true all the way around, I think most people are still just caught up into the coin side of things, the financial aspect, rather than really utilizing or understanding that this technology or crypto is just a subset of blockchain technology, right, that offers way more utility. And I think the more utility conversations that we're having and empowering people to push this technology to help them do their job, just like people are using AI, you're going to see a lot of incredible movement.
Amazing. So talking about digital asset recovery, which is like on crypto Twitter or crypto X, I guess it is now, is like the dirtiest word in blockchain or the dirtiest concept in blockchain. But can you explain a little bit, or if you know anyways, like what led Interpol to looking into this? Is this something that they've been pursuing on their own? Was it something that was inspired by what's going on with like Bitcoin Association and DAR tooling or any of that? Let me know.
Yeah, so it's not so much associated. Ironically, they had reached out to me to present, you know, what the future of law enforcement and blockchain could look like. And, you know, as our discussions kind of continued, you know, we learned that they were actually working on a digital asset framework. So we really wanted to provide, you know, the correct information for them to be able to develop that framework. And I think from my perspective, again, it is something that most law enforcement agencies, you know, including in the United States, are looking to do. We actually had a really interesting prosecutor from Bergen County, New Jersey, there today. And, you know, they're really trying to make the effort to make sure that consumers are protected. I mean, there's, you know, once these digital assets, you know, skate off, it's very difficult to freeze. It's very difficult to return. Sometimes, you know, it may never be returned. And one of the things I learned today that there's over $20 billion just waiting to be, you know, cleaned out of from stolen property, right? I mean, $20 billion. And, you know, when you think of ransomware, you know, that's $5 billion in ransomware payments just in BTC alone over the last 5 years.
Sure.
Yeah, that's somebody's property, right? That it should be returned.
Amen to that. So were they receptive? What was the feedback? I mean, was this them looking for a solution and all of a sudden you showed up and said, hey, by the way, we have it? Or was it, what was their level of sophistication and understanding the concept? You're muted. Sorry.
I think they are a lot more sophisticated than most people give them credit for. You know, I think I had some raised eyebrows when you start talking about the role, the fiduciary role of developing groups. And, you know, the same thing when you're speaking about mining groups having to comply with a lawful order. And I think, you know, from the raised eyebrows, from the discussions, you know, it was something that they had not thought of. You know, it wasn't their immediate way to seize or freeze assets. I mean, typically, you know, they have to rely on a centralized exchange to cooperate with them to freeze them, right? And so when you're talking about changing that dynamic entirely by allowing, you know, the miners to enforce the rules that they're, you know, obligated to, then, you know, now you're removing a bunch of barriers and you're making the system much more efficient.
I don't know. It's interesting because I've experienced that too. If I talk about something like DAR with people that are crypto people, they're like, first, they're either angry or they think I'm an idiot. They think I don't understand what I'm talking about. But then when you talk to normal people or even people that are high performance people from all kinds of other industries, and you explain like, well, yeah, so you have these nodes and they come into consensus and whatever they agree is real. And so if, you know, if something needs to be reassigned because everybody knows Dave's coins were stolen by Tim, so we're going to take them back from Tim and give them back to Dave. And if all the nodes agree, like that's a very, it's actually a pretty straightforward process once you define the process. You know, a normal rational person says, yeah, great. Isn't that how everything works? And so I think it's pretty funny to see the major disconnect, and frankly, an ideological disconnect. This is like explaining to like a hyper orthodox Christian, you know, like something, I don't know, like whether or not you can prove angels exist or something. It's like, whoa, hang on, you know, like you're picking away at like a deep fundamental belief, but it's not something that's ever been like scientifically tested. And so you get this sort of like, I mean, I guess I would call it, you know, the re on social media, but it's fascinating. So anything else in Germany? I mean, I imagine, are you there for a day? Are you there for a few days? Like what else is going on while you're in Germany?
Yeah. So I'm here for one more day for the conference. And then I think I have a down day before I fly out to Switzerland. I'm going to stop by the BSV Blockchain Association headquarters and check in there. And then before I make my way down to Dubai, which I'm super excited to get back there. It's been a year. I absolutely love Dubai. We will be attending the JITEX technology conference, which is the biggest technology conference on the planet. Smart Ledger is really focused on presenting CertaHash there. So we're excited on that.
So CertaHash, I often tell people, where's the coin? So anybody with questions, there's the coin. There it is. This is, if you get to see the alien bodies, that's your check-in tag. So I often say CertaHash is one of my favorite examples for when people, you know, I'll give like a high level Bitcoin presentation where I'll sort of explain like, well, here's how nodes work, here's how you broadcast, here's how you scale, here's what an overlay network looks like. You know, you just kind of go over these things and you get the kind of, yeah, I get it. But is anybody using this for anything? And my favorite example when you get the exhausted, like, well, you know, nobody takes Bitcoin for, you know, to pay for groceries or whatever else. I will often pivot and say, actually, there's this really cool project. And let me give you a little bit of predicate information about cybersecurity and the problem that it solves. And by the way, no, it's on network today. It's actually generating transactions. You know, and then you get the people who, the light bulb, So maybe give me an update on CertaHash. Like, how are things going over there? And then what, like, is that what you're pitching in Dubai or other stuff too?
Yeah, so let me give you the rundown on CertaHash, right? I think it is one of the most exciting applications that is out there. For me, it is that skeleton key to, you know, kind of break through the conflation between blockchain and crypto, right? I mean, when you're having these discussions and, you know, everything is more coin related, you know, instead of data integrity or infrastructure, then you can kind of pivot and explain to them, you know, where these legacy issues are, right? And so for cybersecurity, one of the biggest issues is, you know, this honeypot of information that's being created every day, right? We're all sticking information in somebody else's box, and that box is, you know, got big, you know, dollar signs on it to any cyber criminal that wants to breach it. And once they are able to breach it, it is a free-for-all because that data is, they own it, right? That's going to end up on the dark web or, you know, ransomware or somewhere else. And that's where, you know, it's interesting when you start to look at blockchain as an infrastructure, right? To, you know, everybody says, hey, you know, we don't want to use trusted third parties. Well, I mean, there's reasons why you may use a trusted third party, but there's also reasons why, you know, mitigating the use of those is important. And that's for your own data, right? It's almost impossible to, you know, economically attack a distributed set of records rather than something that's centralized. And then when you start looking at cybersecurity overall, like just information security, data integrity of our environments, you know, we see where this downfall actually occurs, right? Because, you know, 70% of the cybersecurity issues are human related. You know, there's not much you can do about those except for training, education. There's maybe a few applications that we've thought up that could help incentivize, you know, people that are encountering those issues to take another step back and make sure that before they press on a free gym membership, that it actually came from Kurt Walker Yep. Jr. Yeah, right. Yeah. But there's this other 30% of everything from DDoSing to brute force attacks to, you know, just detection. And, you know, CertaHash was built to be, you know, representative of the NIST cybersecurity framework, where you have five categories, you know, protection, detection, and the rest of recovery. And so we wanted to start with detection, as that was one of the easiest ways to demonstrate this technology, right? And one of the biggest value propositions. And that's what it comes down to being an entrepreneur. It's not enough to just create an application. I think Ari Cookie could tell you that, right? You really you really need to start understanding what that value proposition and who is that end user consumer. And for something like CertaHash, where, you know, Sentinel Node, which is that first detection module, you know, it has a huge customer base. When you think of, you know, detection software, is typically they're only available to the upper echelon of enterprise and government.
It's very expensive.
I mean, it's extremely expensive. And when you're thinking about the prevalence of, you know, cyber breaches on a daily basis, I mean, just, you know, from MGM, just last week, the State Department, I mean, there's no shortage. I mean, last night, there was a breach on 17 million WordPress websites where they've stolen all the login information. and this is a huge cost to us. But when you can actually bring all of this utility, right, this value proposition even further down the line to small business, mid-market, and even the individual home user, now you're, and you can do this in a cost-effective way where, guess what? Today, with all of the technology that you and I have sold in our IT past, the detection of a breach is still 220 days. That's when you're going to figure it out.
Yeah,
it's sick. Not acceptable, right? And so when you think of rural hospitals, you think of schools that are, you know, huge targets. Why? Because they have this big bin of information, students, social security numbers, you name it, name, identification, addresses. You know, they have no protection whatsoever, right? And so one of the things that I really am excited most about is being able to kind of share this type of next generation, you know, protection, at least detection in this respect, to those entities in a cost efficient way that, you know, is, you know, something that they would never have access to.
So just to riff on that Simpsons BSV question that we had up there, like what is a, like you couldn't do this with like a quorum of AWS instances or something to provide a similar service? Like why blockchain for like the Sentinel node product or anything else you guys are up to?
Yeah, so, I mean, blockchain prevents fraud, right? It is instant. It's utilizing micropayments. It's super efficient. So we utilize BSV specifically for the taking a snapshot of a network, right? And we do this right now every 10 seconds. And each one of those snapshots is hashed together. So that information is actually gobbledygook to anybody else. And, you know, one of the last things a cyber breacher will do is, you know, try to hide the way that he's made it onto your network. And once they've changed anything in the past, that breaks the actual hash chain, which provides you an alert of an event or anomaly on your network. And that's, you know, 219 days, 23 hours and 59 minutes faster, right, than what you could get it today. Yeah, and I think that that's, you know, one of the key aspects. But the other key aspect is, you know, there's accountability, right? I think we saw with the Uber hack and, you know, just one of the most recent hacks where the CISO is actually getting caught up in legal issues, right? Because of the decisions that they either made or didn't make. And one of the things I like about Sentinel Node is it allows for once that instant alert, is provided, now you have an attestation of who received it and what did they do about it? How did they begin to mitigate that problem? And I think this is a key aspect when you start looking at, you know, the problems with cyber insurance, where the premiums are ever going up, they're covering less and less, and those cyber insurance carriers are writing more checks than they're bringing in. And that's because of the legacy infrastructure, that wholly trust on a or trusted third party that we're sticking our data in there for. And again, you know, we're just putting a target on it.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's my honestly, like I said, Certa Hash is maybe not my absolute favorite app in all blockchain, but it's such a good one, especially when we talk about the, like enterprise, which is one of those things that everybody's like, well, first of all, what does that mean? And second of all, is an enterprise like the last thing that ever gets implemented with new technology? But I think it's a great example of, no, it's here, it's now, and it actually solves an enterprise level problem and the kind of problem that's worth billions or tens of billions of dollars a year to the real economy too. So it's not JPEG trading, it's not DeFi, it is an enterprise cybersecurity application, which is really, really nice for my general Bitcoin or blockchain pitch deck for, hey, here are some practical problems we can solve. We got another question here from Mr. Vidal, one of the local Floridians, saying, has the market value of data surpassed the market cap of oil? I don't know. I need to see some math on it, frankly. You're kind of a graph guy, Brian. do you have any math or anything to address on that?
I'm definitely not a math guy, that's for sure. But, you know, I would say, you know, we are kind of growing out of this big data era. You know, we've seen that happen. You know, everybody talked about cloud analytics and, you know, what you can pull from that information. And now we are in the extreme data era where not only is that information accessible, right? Data is the new oil. But, you know, you have this proliferation of smart devices, sensors, drones, satellite imagery, you name it. And all of this information is all this data is key to providing better efficiencies, better programs, better frameworks, better, you know, experiences. And yeah, I would say, you know, potentially data has surpassed the value of oil, and it should have. It should, because that's what pushes us forward, right? I think when you have the intersection of AI and blockchain, which, you know, I hate when people separate them because you actually need them together for a multitude of reasons, all right? I hate when people just separate blockchain as a separate technology from other emerging technologies, because blockchain is actually this infrastructure for the data integrity of all of those technologies.
Right. It's part of the stack.
Yeah. And so, you know, to answer the question, yeah, I would say, you know, people have not realized how valuable their data is, especially the individual consumer. They've always been the product, right? They've never been, you know, the actual person in charge. And I think that that tide is changing. Obviously, there's years to come and there's a lot of education. I mean, everybody likes to say own your own data, but what does that really mean? And do you really want to own your own data, and how do you own it, right? And how do you best protect it? So I think that there's a lot of discussions that need to occur, but I think data is the new oil for sure.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. So going back to like Dubai, the Middle East is in something of a shakeup in the last few days here. Dubai is pretty geographically separated from what's going on in the Levant, as the fancy people call it. But any concerns with any of that? Any heightened security for Americans or anybody coming into Arab countries or anything like that?
Not that I'm aware of. And, you know, to be honest, you know, I'm more sad of the situation, that is unfolding. I think we're at a time in the world where we need a lot more love and laughter, right? And the hate that is just, you know, it falls off of people's mouths nowadays, right? Whether you're on Twitter, whether you're in person, right? There's just a lot of angerness. And, you know, I think, you know, my experience in Dubai is always, the last one was, you know, I'll never forget it. It definitely changed my life. And I'm excited to go back. And, you know, I don't want to live my life in fear ever, right? God is the best of planners. And as long as I'm pushing forward, that's what I'm planning to do.
Yeah. No, I've really enjoyed the Middle East when I've gone too. It was always a little bit being, you know, I was, 13 or something when 9/11 happened. And so for me, it was always like, oh, the Middle East was always like this giant kind of boogeyman. But now having done business there, in fact, in many ways, I prefer it. So it's really interesting to sort of experience things firsthand and feel the world getting smaller in a good way, frankly. So I guess maybe not officially from the live stream, but from myself, like, you know, thoughts and prayers out to everybody. It's the people that get victimized, you know, the state of Israel or you know, Hamas and all this stuff. No fun. So, you know, thoughts and prayers to everybody out there. Take care of each other. Question here from Joey. And then we're going to take a break at the half hour. I need to stretch my legs for half a second here. Joey asking, what do you say to people that say there are cloud products that solve threat detection in the same time or less?
I say that's not true. If that was the case, we wouldn't have a global average of 220 days. And that's why I didn't make up that, right? I didn't come up with that statistic. That was 22 years of IBM Ponyman reporting on data breaches specifically, right? Yep. So I would say here's the issue with those type of cloud solutions. Guess what? You have to send your records, your data to that cloud provider. That's a cost. It's an attack vector, right? The second thing you do, you have to have some other provider analyze that information. That's another attack vector. And now you have this delayed response because, you know, by the time they've collected, by the time they've analyzed, by the time they've let you know, it's been 220 days. And, you know, we need something that provides instant, you know, alert detection, you know, right from the same network that you're operating it on. And so we're not requiring you to send your data outside of your network. And we're not even we're just taking a simple snapshot of that data. And again, there's other tools that help prevent or mitigate afterwards, but this is much like a tripwire that just allows you to know that somebody has been in your home and have rifled through your drawers and have taken your favorite coin.
Yeah, no good. So let's take a quick break. We'll be back in about 30 seconds and do the second half.
This is buybsv.com, the quick and simple way to buy Bitcoin SV. You can't miss it. It says a quick and simple way to buy BSV on buybsv.com. It's safe and secure. Within an hour, you'll own BSV digital assets, which means it's so quick and simple. So if you want to buy BSV, use buybsv.com. It does exactly what it says.
And we're back. All right. So, Brian, one of the other things that I think maybe not as many people know you for, but probably should, is some of the work that you've done specifically in the regulatory space. You're on Capitol Hill, you know, you're posting pictures of the Capitol building and then, you know, this kind of thing. And I think a lot of people aren't sure if this kind of stuff is going on in the blockchain economy. Like, why don't we have more people doing this kind of thing? So maybe let us know a little bit what the landscape looks like and sort of how you're participating and what's going on.
So, yeah, no, that's a great question. And there is a lot of movement happening. I've had over 200 Capitol Hill meetings over the last year and a half. So these are a lot of discussions. And I know that while the headlines don't kind of represent the utility discussions that I'm having with, you know, both congressional and Senate staff and members and committee members and various agencies, you know, the reality is those conversations are pushing forward and it is a realization. And it's really it's unfortunate that there's such a hyper-focus by the media on the burning cars on the sides of the road, because that's what really kind of motivates our politicians to come up with these frameworks for things that they still don't understand. And so, you know, to kind of paint you a picture of that landscape, you know, a couple of years ago, the BSV Blockchain Association had asked me to kind of do much more public policy work. And, you know, I'd been involved in politics previously and, you know, it wasn't my favorite subject, but I felt that I was able to do it and wanted to be able to make a difference. So I thought, hey, if I can serve in that way, let me serve. And I think we've done a lot of work putting the, you know, the basis, foundational basis for our perspective and narrative out there, whether it's one pagers or talking points, you know, and that was really my first focus in the first few months. And then as I was kind of having these discussions, and then FTX occurred, right? And I think that was a huge change for the discussions that I was having, because I was basically telling them that these things were occurring and, you know, they didn't believe it. You know, they'd hear Luna or something like that, but it didn't seem real to them. But it seemed real when you had a guy that was giving $80 million to various politicians on Capitol Hill to kind of push his, you know, scam forward. And so I think that they took a step back and said, wait a minute, what is going on here? And, you know, let's get that guy, you know, with the big ears back here so he can tell me a little bit more about, you know, what may happen. And so as we had these utility discussions, it really started to dawn on them that, wait a minute, there's much more to this. And, you know, I would say after 200 meetings, you know, over 2 years of basically doing this, we've improved our team tremendously. It's not just me in the United States anymore. It's Marcin Zarakowski and Patrick Prince and Nico and even Sean Ryan are participating in, you know, moving this political discussion forward, whether it's in the UK, whether it's in the EU, whether wherever it may be, in Germany, right? I've had discussions with over 30 different countries on about blockchain in some respect, blockchain utility. I have been spending a great deal of time with various agencies to help them with utility type of applications and ideas. And that spans from the federal government all the way down to the state government. I've obviously done quite a bit of work in New York State with even presenting at Senate committee hearings, and even down to the municipal status where I've worked with, you know, the Innovation Center in New York City and the New York City IT team to really put forth ideas of how they can create these efficiency applications, everything from, say, a handicap placard solution that prevents 50% of the handicap placards in downtown Manhattan from being fraudulent, right? So, like, these are things that they can really bite into, and they understand the value of what it costs them in lost revenue, right? Lost fines and just the issue that handicapped people may have when they're visiting Manhattan, you know, themselves. And it also highlights the inefficiencies within their own department processes. Like, for example, a handicap placard, if you were to ask for one, you're going to send all of your data, your medical data, your personal data to a department. They're going to make sure that you sent it all, and then they're going to send it to somebody else, a different department. And, you know, meanwhile, you have no idea if you're, you know, even getting the application. So, you know, the handicap placard. So, no, there's a lot of ways that this can empower, you know, that person that's submitting that information more securely and instantly, and even, you know, understand where that is happening and where his application is in the process. Just by simple transactions, right? And that's where, you know, I see a lot of the discussion that we have is really gone from, okay, we no longer want to hear the theory, like you. Where's the utility? Where's the application? Where is this stuff that we're promised, right? And it's not just 18 months away.
Well, you know, thank God. you know, and it's really key, actually, to, you know, solve real world problems and that kind of thing. I think one of the real world problems also that you have done more than dabble in with your thought leadership is, and you've touched on this a little bit here, but more specifically on like mining economics and like the systemic scalability of the system, especially as it pertains to things like the halvening, which are coming up early next year. We're going to have, you know, the event where the amount of coins that are emitted via, you know, the inflationary subsidy of Bitcoin is going to cut in half in the next, what is it? Gosh, we're only like 5 months out at this point. And so, you know, let's talk a little bit about the need for utility and the need for scalability being like a sort of chicken and egg problem that both need to be solved at the same time. And then with a little bit of focus on the mining economics stuff, which I was delighted and honored to help you with, by the way. So thank you for circling me in on that. But let's talk a little bit about, first of all, like, why did you dig into that as a concept and decide to write an ebook about it? And secondly, maybe was there anything that sort of shocked you about, you know, maybe you learned mid-process?
Yeah, so I would say the shock came from the very beginning. And I was down in Miami. You and I were both at a conference for miners.
Disrupt. Yeah.
Disrupt, yeah. And it was a year, not this past one, but the year before. And I really spent a lot of time outside talking to actual miners, right? BTC miners or just miners of any proof of work chain. And it was so shockingly bad that they had no idea for a long-term business plan whatsoever. And when I started talking about, you know, the halving and, you know, what happens when, you know, the subsidy goes down and what do you think happens with those transaction fees and, you know, just asking open-ended questions, and they just had not thought anything about it. And it kind of struck me as odd, right? You've invested, you know, money and time and energy into, you know, building a business that's, you know, right now, man, profitable.
Man, money. How about like hundreds of millions of dollars in a lot of cases here?
And it's shocking that there's not a business, again, that, you know, not to bring Ari Kuki up, but he should like be there knocking on the door, explaining to them, hey, what are you doing? Like, what's your plan, you know, for 193 or 200 days from now, like, or, you know, after the next halving, like, you know, there is going to be an effect, whether somebody, you know, wants to pretend or not. whether that's, you know, an honest effect from the happening or whether it's a dishonest one. I think we see a lot of manipulation within the crypto space on a daily basis. I just think that the honesty that could be, you know, the honesty of miners is something that's integral to the foundational aspects of blockchain, right? And for, you know, this large contingent, you know, that is a pillar, you know, for them not to really have a long-term idea of how they're going to serve this industry is scary, right? And that's what really motivated me to put the book together. Obviously, working with you and your expertise, that is, you know, that's, I couldn't do it without experts, right? And without your insight. I own an ASIC miner from, you know, 2018, but, you know, I outside of that, like, you know, I need to rely on experts like you and Greg Ward, right? Greg is a, you know, thought leader in not just this space, but sustainability and, you know, Web3, just carbon footprints, you name it. The guy is just incredible. And, you know, I not to change the subject, but I think it's important, you know, I don't want accolades from people. You know, I appreciate when somebody pats me on the back for, you know, good job, Ryan, right? But, you know, all of us are just part of a team of an extension, you know, whether it's, you know, me with Sean and the Smart Ledger team with Greg and Ava, whether it's us as a BSV Blockchain Association, whether it's us as, you know, entrepreneurs on the space, you know, we have to do a better job of cooperating and competing, which is the same aspect that miners need to do, right? They need to cooperate and compete at the same time. And, you know, to answer your last part question of that, one of the things that really, like, bother me the most about mining right now is there's just such a focus on adding more hash, right? Like, that's only one aspect of what a node does. You know, they also have to propagate these blocks. And, you know, again, chicken egg, to where if we're having huge blocks and we need to be able to make sure that the infrastructure in between miners is also something that can maintain, you know, maintain an enterprise solution.
For sure. Where can we get the book?
So all of these eBooks are available under the resource tab of the BSV Blockchain Association website. They are free. So eat them up. I've written probably four or five over the last 4 years, because this I'm coming on my fourth year, I believe, at the association.
Time flies, man.
Seems like it's gone. Like, if you did it dog years, I've been here for 28 or something. So,
all right, with the official haircut of BSV, no less. Yes. So, no, it really is fascinating. Like, to your point about, you know, these hashing companies being there and not really having a business plan, I saw the, I think it was the Marathon. Marathon's like the, I don't know, they might be the second largest mining company in the country, publicly traded, like, you know, whatever. But the CEO is on some kind of a like Q&A, and somebody asked them, like, what is the plan for, you know, over the next, because it's been a long time since they've been profitable, and then asking, like, what is the plan for profitability, you know, into the next 18 months or something like that? And he's like, well, you know, he's like, you see him like, you know, looking to God for an answer, right? And then he just kind of says, like, wow, you know, I just really got to hope that number goes up. And, you know, and literally left it like end of conference call, like a couple $100 million worth of shareholders and stuff, all at like, what's the plan out of this? And like, you know, that basically, like, I don't know, man, we really wish Sam Bankman-Fried was back. So just wild, really, really wild.
It's actually scary. It's scary that people invested in them, right, to be a steward of their money and investment. And, right. You know, right. What do you got? You know, and I think it is it's an opportunity, though, right? These miners will go out of business and there will be tons of gear for people that understand how to run a mining operation like yourself. So, you know, potentially, you know, you'll have access to new ASICs and other hardware in the future.
Amen. Let's take a couple questions from the audience. Mr. Moon has been both fearlessly and flawlessly starring them to put up here in the chat. So, Mr. Moon, thank you for your service. Messy times two brilliant, handsome, and capable gentlemen in one broadcast. How has the world earned such an honor? Mr. Messina, you are just really a master of words and compliments. So thanks for watching, Christopher. We appreciate you. And check out the Messy Times, one of the truly independent shows on all kinds of topics, frankly. Like he'll talk blockchain, he'll talk global politics and just everything in the middle. He's talking like interesting international business and good guy. So a completely
hilarious guy.
He's also very, very funny. Like he's very sharp, but really like a sense of humor. So you should sponsor our show, Christopher, since I've now given you a shout out on mine. So let's take another question. He's also bald. He also has the official haircut of of Big Block Bitcoin. Erlich Bachman, is Smart Ledger accepting offers from investors? Ooh.
Wow, that's always a great question to hear. You know, I'm very proud that we've been able, we're going on our fourth year, right? And I think that is, you know, a testament to our team. We've built this organically. We've invested our own money into our own products, including CertiHash, which we collaborated with IBM to develop. We're always interested in, you know, having conversations around utility solutions. I think more so it's some of the products that we would like to push forward. We have, I think if you go back to your January show, or I can't believe it's almost the end of the year already, but if you go back to, you know, your first show this year where we shared, you know, 20 different applications, you know, we have a very energetic and, you know, incredible team, but obviously being able to, we have to keep everything focused on what we can, you know, handle within a time period or a day. So, I mean, we're always open to investment offers, especially around these products that are rolling out now, right? That something like CertiHash that, you know, I look at CertiHash as a game changer in the sense of if we just captured, you know, 1% or 0.3% of the market as it exists today for detection, you're talking a multi-billion dollar company. And now if you can actually open that market up to include mid-market, small business, and individual users, you know, there's something magical there. So yeah, contact me.
Love it. Joey, why would any large enterprise get Smart Ledger when on AWS? I think he's asking when BSV is on AWS, which actually is not the case, by the way. But so I'll give a little clarification. My company, Gorilla Pool, runs 5 node client instances. None of them are on AWS. We have 2 bare metal, 2 cloud, and we have 1 backup in a garage in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So all professional data centers, but both geographically and economically distributed, I guess. So we have no 2 nodes in like the same, not just physical location, but also like company. So we rent space from 4 different companies for 1 each of 4 distribution like that. And none of them are Amazon. So that's part of us just trying to be as decentralized as possible for the sake of persistence. And when people ask questions like, well, isn't the whole thing just on Amazon? I get to say, You get another question. I wanted to ask this anyways. What is proof of ESG? I know the answer to this question. What's going on with proof of ESG? So let the world know what it is and where it's going.
Yeah, usually when somebody hears ESG, you know, they have a reaction or not, right? Oh, this is the worst thing ever. Oh, I don't, it's some global, you know, conspiracy. ESG to me is something that is required in the sense of honesty, right? First and foremost, we have to have an honest discussion because what's happening now is greenwashing, right? Every company will just put out a statement, oh, this, and, you know, trick their consumers no different than anybody else into believing that they have a sustainable footprint. And it's not that I want to, you know, decarbonize the world to 100% or lower the temperature or raise the temperature. I just really want an honest discussion, right? I am not a climate scientist. I'm not going to pretend to be one. But unfortunately, what we see are, data that is manipulated and data that is, you know, charged with one bias or another. And then we also see this legal structure that is forming these frameworks that are forming for businesses, whether it's the COP26, whether it's SEC sustainability reporting. Yep. And there's no real way for these businesses to actually meet those requirements with the technology that they have. So they're, guess what they have to do? They have to stretch the truth a little bit most times, right? Or they do things that don't necessarily like, say remove carbon, sequester carbon, right? They buy a carbon credit that is not verified, that just is made up as anything else. But so proof of ESG is just this new retake on what ESG could be in the sense of utilizing blockchain to validate this information, right? And also to help them reduce the the walls that they put up on a value chain because of cybersecurity issues, and be able to allow these businesses to communicate back and forth very easily, right? And very securely. And then now you are able to actually ascertain what a scope 1, 2, or 3 emission is because you have that data across the value chain. But first and foremost, proof of ESG was to demonstrate, you know, the sustainability of these blockchains in the first place, because you can't, you know, promote ESG or sustainability if you're, you know, 1200 kilograms of CO2 per transaction, like on BTC. You need something that is scalable and bounded like BSV that allows for less than 2 kilograms of CO2 per transaction. And in fact, you know, this is a technology that the more you use it for the first time ever in the history of mankind, the smaller that footprint grows. And so, you know, for me, I want to set out to prove that point first. So we've been doing a lot of work. You'll hear more about something called Web3 CO2. And that, what that is a tool set that really allows you to not just compare various blockchains, but even beyond that, because, you know, BSV is not competing with BTC or PCH. Like, that's been over. BSV is competing with displacing the legacy energy footprint in various industries now, whether financial, cloud, you name it. And so that is that next step of, you know, demonstrating where that, that savings and efficiency actually comes by utilizing a more scalable, sustainable infrastructure.
Yeah, absolutely. Code Enlighten, I believe that's Greg, saying Brian founded Proof of ESG several years ago, ahead of his time. Can he talk about that or Web3 Energy Index and why it's so important for dispelling myths about the Bitcoin trilemma? Let's do the trilemma conversation in like 2 minutes, because there's a few more questions I'd like us to get to, and we tragically only have about 6.5 minutes left.
So, you know, again, the web, I think what Code Enlighten was referring to is that Web3 CO2 project that we're working on. I mean, Proof of ESG was really, you know, a framework to provide businesses a new way to kind of look at smart data, smart energy, you know, smart infrastructure. Web3 CO2 is going to be more of that tool to allow them to, you know, provide that data to other people, whether it is the SEC or whether it is, you know, COP26. So I think there's that difference there. But they go hand in hand, right? All of these things are, you know, whether you're talking about the scalability, whether you're talking about sustainability, whether you're talking about ESG, you know, we're able to utilize this data as we are now in 6 different partner farms to kind of collect data from growing hemp, right, to the soil analysis, atmospheric data, plant data, and then storing that data on chain. And then simply after the harvest season, taking a core sample and being able to know and authenticate on chain how much carbon was actually sequestered, right? And that's something that surpasses carbon credits today, where they're just kind of made up and that money isn't actually going to decarbonize anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Next question, please. Brian, hey, how about Ticketmint? Do you think it's too honest for the ticket industry? You know, everybody needs their cut.
Yeah, I think Ticketmint is, you know, it's something I wish I could spend more time working on personally. It's badly needed, right? I mean, just in the sense of honest and fair ticketing solutions. And just the, when you start combining it with blockchain and the collectible aspect and, you know, the monetization aspect of it, I think it is something that would be fun and neat to solve some of these, you know, issues that we do see with ticketing. Unfortunately, you know, for me, I have so many hours in a day. We have a team that's pushing that one forward, but it's I wish it was something I could spend more time into. But it's still, you know, pushing away. It's out there.
For sure. Another question, Mr. Moon. Kurt, do you think the mining community will get on board if they know about your efforts with Brian? And do they know, let's see, the concept of large block size enterprise? So, yeah, I think in a very basic sense, you know, we're talking about a system that can scale because it is designed to scale in many ways. It's an economic system, and therefore individual actors that think that they can specialize in a specific aspect of blockchain scaling can then actually do a net good for the sake of that scaling and seek profit in doing it. And so there's a huge opportunity there. And I think truly, like, that is one of the key opportunities here that a normal person can still, you know, get involved in Bitcoin infrastructure for just a few thousand dollars. As far as I'm aware, nobody else has a public BSV mining pool other than Gorilla Pool, of which I am the founder. So, you know, full disclosure here. But if anybody out there wanted to start mining, I mean, there you have it. Like, come mine with Gorilla Pool. Like, you will do a net good instantaneously for the network, and you get paid to do that. So, pretty crucial piece of information there for anybody that says, "Man, I wish I could help." Like, if you know, if you could put like $2,000 or $3,000 into something, like, you are definitely objectively and observably helping the network and getting paid to do it. So something to consider there. Another question, Joey D. Don, missed my question. I meant large businesses run their data centers, apps, Kubernetes workloads, virtual machines, etc., in AWS. If AWS has a cybersecurity product as well, why not use that? I'd love to comment, and then Brian, I'll give you the last word here. But I think in a very basic sense, cybersecurity is a lot about compartmentalization as well. So if your entire stack is running in AWS, you kind of need to have a separate system that is at least doing some check against the core system. Because if AWS itself could be compromised, that's going to be the vector by which you are attacked and your data is exfiltrated. So you can use AWS tools as well. In fact, most large enterprises are going to use multiple tool sets that are hosted in various other ways too. So this is key. So using the external system, that's kind of the point. Like, this is why it's valuable, is because BSV is a third-party public ledger that can't be tampered with. And AWS, while secure, I'm not criticizing AWS, but they are imperfect. And, you know, since everything's imperfect, you need to have that redundancy. So, Brian, anything I've missed on that front?
No, you summed it up perfectly. And it is a tripwire, right? I mean, it's set separately. So, you know, I wouldn't want it in that stack, like you said.
Why is the BTC crowd finally realizing Bitcoin is Turing complete? Yeah, that's pretty funny. I pointed it out to the creator of this BitVM thing that came out, the white paper for, you know, hey, Turing complete Bitcoin, isn't this novel? And basically said, oh, hey, like, that's pretty interesting. Big blockers have been working on stuff like this for 9 years now. An instant block. He blocked me the second I brought it up. So, but no, we've got our small blocker friends discovering things that got us canceled many, many years ago. So very interesting to see them catch up and then pretend we don't exist. You know, good stuff. Jared Taylor, best way to contact you, Kurt, regarding partnering with GorillaPool. You can go to GorillaPool.com and do the contact us form. You can also shoot me a DM on Twitter or X, and then I can connect you with Kevin, who's our guy who manages the flow on ASICs and hosting and that kind of stuff. So GorillaPool.com works, or you can shoot me a DM, and we'll get you started. Brian, it is 3 p.m., Is Brian Satoshi? No, I can confirm Brian is not Satoshi, but he's a hell of a guy. So, Brian, we're at the top of the hour. Any closing thoughts as we wrap up? Muted again. You're muted. Sorry. Yeah,
just be well. I would say be well, right? Like as you would always advocate. I think the world needs it at this point. And, you know, invest in yourself, invest in the time. There's a huge opportunity here for anybody that can actually see the value and just look for that value.
Yep. Amen to that. Brian, thanks so much for having you on. Always a pleasure. I'm sure I will be seeing you soon. And safe travels as you make your way across the globe.
Thanks, Kurt. Appreciate it.
Take care. So, everybody, it's World Mental Health Day, which may or may not be relevant to you. But if you look at the stats, most people have someone in their lives that suffers from maybe something as simple as depression or things that are very, very complex, complicating to your lives and whatever else. So a reminder that it's okay to not be okay, and that you can reach out for help basically no matter where you are. If you can hear this show, there's help for you. So and if you can't hear this show, then, you know, I apologize. That's part of the problem. Anyways, I think it's extra important, you know, with all the drama and stuff going on. You know, the constant, like, just flagrant disregard for each other's humanity over the fact that, like, we disagree about which distributed ledger is best. Like, that's the kind of thing we really could do without. So if you're out there and looking to make a difference in the world, one of the easiest ways to make a difference in the world is to simply be good to each other. You know, and invite someone over for dinner, or, you know, take care of somebody that would, you know, maybe really appreciate, like, just a really simple act of kindness. So that's my advice. Reach out to your friends, maybe say hi to someone that you haven't talked to in a while, and truly be good to each other. So everybody, I'm Kurt Wooker Jr. This has been the Coin Geek Weekly live stream. We are live every single Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from the South Florida Citadel, home of BSV and all the really cool stuff going on in Bitcoin that people will then repurpose and act like was their brand new and novel idea. So be prepared to be copy-pasted by all the people in the universe. Now I'm 3 minutes over and still talking. So thanks, everybody. Again, like, subscribe, hit the alert bell, all that stuff. See you next week. Bye-bye.
On this week's CoinGeek Conversations, Mohammed Jabba, the co-founder of ELAS.
So what we did was, and we leveraged off the existing hardware and processes and configured it to be able to also interact with the blockchain once a trigger was done, such as opening the box. So at the moment, these tags are tamper evident. So if they're broken, you can see that. But we've taken it a step further and linked that up with a digital twin pairing and then recording those events as they happened onto the blockchain.
Join Mohammed Jabba and me, Charles Miller, for our next CoinGeek Conversation.
BuyBSV.com, a quick and simple way to buy Bitcoin SV. It does exactly what it says.